This season, a new hot deal has arrived at Metro. $25 a line for 4 lines with all the data you need and 4 free Samsung Galaxy A15 5G phones. Getting Metro's best deals is easy. No ID required, no activation fees. Get a new number or keep your own. It's up to you. That's 4 lines for $25 a line plus 4 free phones. Visit a store or go online today. Only at Metro by T-Mobile.
When you join Metro Plus Tax, for a limited time and subject to change. Max 1 offer per account.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
5 seconds to Sharp. Top of the key. Lost the dribble. He's got to pick it up. It's scooped up by Condon. Condon secures it. And Florida found a way. From 12 down to the school's third national championship in men's basketball. 5 seconds to Sharp. Top of the key. Lost the dribble. He's got to pick it up. It's scooped up by Condon. Condon secures it. And Florida found a way. From 12 down to the school's third national championship in men's basketball.
Thank you to the NCAA Westwood One Radio Network. Kevin Kugler on the call, just dynamite there in the final seconds to chronicle all the action. Then you heard Walter Clayton Jr. explaining how he was 0-for in the first half, could not find his shot. He was being harassed by the Houston defense. And even, you know, 5 or so minutes into the second half, he still wasn't able to locate and then came up with some big shots down the stretch. Only 11 points in this final game, but good enough to be the most outstanding player of the tournament. And the Gators are your national champs.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't working from the outside. Credit him. He took it to the hole twice. Big, big plays. Once a beautiful left-handed layup. That's what you got to do. Guys like me are great outside shooters, and Steph Curry and Walter Clayton.
Yeah.
When you're getting
yes.
covered, you know, it's tough. You know, Walter Clayton doesn't want to drive to the hole. I think that showed his toughness and the closeout. So in addition to being a great scorer, I mean, that guy is definitely going to bring toughness to whoever drafts him.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, listen, this entire Florida team, though, as you're saying, super tough. All these comebacks. I mean, to take out UConn, the back-to-back national champion, even though they were in a down year. That Texas Tech game, they were dead and buried. Yep. Auburn was a back-and-forth affair in the second half, and Auburn was the number one overall seed. And then Houston, you felt like this was the year for them. I mean, season team, season head coach, you know, all setting up well 3 hours away from the Houston campus. You're in San Antonio, and Kelvin Sampson getting his flowers. And ultimately, it's a 39-year-old head coach who's been at Florida for 3 years who apparently has found some analytics, you know, something new, something that nobody's seen. We're not exactly sure what it is, but the legend of Todd Golden is now born. And he's on a rocket ship. So it was just, you know, it wasn't the most pretty game, that's for sure. But it was still exciting. And I thought it was a great Final Four.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm not sure history will remember it as a great Final Four because of a little bit lack of star power. In the sense that, you know, you didn't have...
You had Cooper Flagg, though.
You had Cooper Flagg, but he lost. You didn't have the Blue Bloods in the finals. So I think it actually was a great Final Four. I'm not sure if it's remembered that way. Kind of feels like, I think we're in this weird period of college basketball where they're adjusting to NIL and the transfer portal, and you kind of never know what's going to go down. This was fascinating, and it was a great game. I honestly thought it wasn't a great, I thought like, well, Houston is, they got this one. Like, there's no drama here, no drama here, no drama here. And then, boom, drama. All of a sudden, it came out of nowhere.
I know. It looked dead and buried, and Florida again looked dead and buried. And especially when they're down, and they were getting technical fouls. Like, it just, for silly stuff, the bench got a technical foul for coming onto the court. You know, it was just like these like loss of composure, which obviously that's more what technical fouls are. And you thought, wow, we're going to watch them sort of implode and Houston might cruise here because they're suffocating defense. But then to Florida's credit, they met Houston right where they're at. They won a Houston-type game. And you can tell by the final score, 65-63. I mean, that's how Houston, like, does things.
Yeah. I mean, well, Florida, it turns out, has those defenders, too. I mean, they were all over the perimeter. Early in the game, they let Alex Condon just have the ball every time, and it worked. The big man for Florida, he walked more times. They called three walks on him, I believe. He walked at least six times. He was so awkward.
Yeah.
But he, to his credit, he didn't give up. He was running the floor well. Not highly skilled, but that's, Florida was, again, once again, come back to that word, resilience and toughness.
It was weird, though, because as, you know, as good as this is for Florida and the third national championship and all of that, the final play, it was kind of weird. It was almost like a little, like, stay with me on this. It was a little like the final scene in The Sopranos. We're just like, wait, what just happened? You know, the fact that Emmanuel Sharp, you know, just could not get a shot off. And, you know, kudos to Walter Clayton Jr. for closing out on him, forcing him to second guess the shot. He's up in the air and then comes down with it. So he had lost the pivot foot. He hadn't attempted the shot. And so if he had touched the ball again, he would have been called for a travel, rightly so. So he's backing away from the basketball, hoping a teammate's going to, what, come in and save the day?
But grab it and fire up a shot, yeah.
You know, time ran out, and Florida grabbed the rebound. Manny, can I hear Walter Clayton Jr. talking about that final closeout? This would be cut 18 on our sheet. What he saw?
Sharp kind of creeped down to the baseline. I seen a back screen, so I'm yelling back screen at Doe. And then Sharp ended up slipping it. They tried to set like a little elevator screen, so just went out there. You know, we work on it in practice, kind of closing out, jumping to the side so you don't foul the shooter. So he kind of pumped fake, threw the ball down, ended up being a good play. Doe got on it. We won the game.
I don't think anyone would say that Emmanuel Sharp had like a brain fart. This wasn't a Chris Webber situation with calling a timeout when you don't have one. He actually was doing, in theory, the right thing, which is not touch the ball, because then it would have been a turnover. The question is, in that moment, you're just helpless watching the ball there. Should you have grabbed it just to stop the clock?
Yeah, just and then you would add a foul, Florida, and go to the line. I think so. By the way, so you're comparing, I just want to play this out, Emmanuel Sharp to Tony Soprano, who clearly died in that last scene. Are we all in agreement there? So he basically, they should have just gone to black because he died.
I think it felt like it just sort of went to black, because didn't you watch that and you're like, totally. What happened? That he didn't even get the shot off.
The first words I said were, what just happened? It said, that, which I guess is, you might say it's disappointing, but I didn't feel disappointed by that because it was characteristic of the last 3 minutes of the game. Listen, Florida wasn't exactly smooth sailing on offense either. They were fighting for everything they could get.
Listen, this happens in football sometimes, right, where you're at like a 4th and 15 and it's the last ditch desperation play and the quarterback just runs around and eventually gets like sacked, you know,
or it's a backwards passes and
it was just a kind of anticlimactic a little bit at the end because he didn't even get the shot off. Well, like Cooper Flagg got a shot off, he shorted it, but they did get a play.
I mean, listen, looking back on it, Houston, they only needed two, right? It was a 2-point game.
Yep.
I thought in the last few minutes of the game, They did not respond well to Florida's pressure. They didn't get anything anywhere near the basket. And that last play, there was nobody within 10 feet of the basket. They were so high up. I thought they should have maybe just played for the tie.
So I thought we were going to overtime at one point, but they did not. They were just around the perimeter. And should they have gone to the hoop as opposed to going for the win?
Obviously now we can say that.
But, you know, to be fair to Houston, they were one of the best three-point shooting teams all season long by percentage. So I can see why they thought, all right, we'll live with that.
Also, I'm not sure they were super confident they would hit two free throws if they got to the rim.
There.
That's a lot of pressure. Can you imagine being 2 seconds left and you're not a great free throw shooter to start with if it's one of the Houston big men? That's pretty tough. I know there's a story that Kelvin Sampson makes them all shoot 153 throws a day.
It
cost them the tournament last year. I still think that's a lot of pressure to be on the line. I don't think anybody's going to hit two.
You might want to bump that up to like 200 a day because they were 9 of 14.
Yeah.
From the free throw line, whereas Florida was 17 for 21. That's 81% versus 64%.
Yeah. By the way, then I can't believe, did Condon, their big man, did he bank a free throw in early? His free throws were early. I heard one of the Florida coaches talking about that after the game. We were just as surprised as everyone else those free throws went in. So he's an awkward, weird player. The Australian big man for Florida. Mm-hmm. You never know what he's going to do. He's whack. I mean, he fights for the ball, But he is a very unorthodox, kind of clunky player.
Yeah, on the ground a lot. And, you know, corralled that final, whatever that was. The ball was just like in midair, you know, just rolling around on the ground, not in midair.
That's a Houston thing, to get to every ball on the ground. That's what they do in every practice, is they practice fighting for the ball, and Florida out Houston.
Crazy. 888-710-4ISN. What will this tournament be remembered for more? The collapses, Duke against Houston, Houston against Florida, or Florida's comebacks? Let us know what you think. Meanwhile, around here, we had some very important business, and that is Pearl Jam Season 4. Our pal Nick is on the line from Texas. Nick creates this every year. He's the proprietor. And Nick, you've got some very good news for us on who won this year's Pearl Jam. How you doing, pal?
Good morning, Maggie. Good morning, Perloff.
Good morning.
Well, here we are. Brackets have been busted. The nets have been cut down. Maggie, not going into break with a teaser, but a spoiler, we do have our winner of Season 4 of Pearl Jam, along with updates of everybody else.
All right, Nick, lay it on us. Give us the good news.
All right, well, we'll start from the bottom, go to the top. So we have Manny finishing with 114th place.
Followed
by Maggie.
Nailed it.
Followed by Maggie in 87th place.
All right, not bad.
Coming in behind Maggie, we have Andrew Bogish in 47th place. And then we have EJ right behind Bogish in 43rd place.
Be Bogish, haha.
And then we have Perloff coming in 25th. Now, of course, Maggie, going in the break, let everybody know who the winner was, which Andrew Kaplan did end up winning, but it did come down to that very last game. He was tied with Barry Bernardo, who was our top listener, who did come in second, but congratulations to Andrew Kaplan.
How about that? Kaplan, who told us he's our Wizard of Oz behind the curtain here, says he didn't watch a minute of College Hoops all season long. It's not really in his job description at all. And he's the one who wins the whole dang thing.
Any surprise? That's kind of how this thing works.
Amazing. Wait, Nick, where did you finish, sir?
Don't ask.
Well, now, I do have some honorable mentions. So representing for all the women across the nation that were in our bracket, we have Kristen in Buffalo, who ended up in number 20. Then we have our friend of the show, Zach Gelb, who was the 23rd. One of our regulars in chat row, we have Pine Needles, who was 24th. And then Perloff's wife, Sarah with an H, was 76th.
Nice.
And then myself, I was 145th.
Oh, no, Nick. 145th. You'll get him next time. You know, hopefully. You did a great job, Nick, really keeping tabs on all of this. And you're the best for doing it. We have so much fun with this every single year. And I know, unfortunately, for everyone in H-Town where you reside, it's got to be a little bit of a gloomy Tuesday. But great tournament. And hopefully they look on the bright side of all they accomplished this year.
Yeah, there's going to be some somber twos around here, especially when I go into work. A lot of people had them in their brackets, but the season is over. We have next year to hopefully look forward to, and I really enjoy doing this for you guys, so thank you for allowing me to do this, and thank you.
Nick, you're the man. Thank you so much. Say hi to the family for us. And, you know, I think this actually came out kind of like the way, like, it's not that much of a shock.
Yeah.
You know, Kaplan winning.
One shining moment. Do you guys do this thing where you look back at your bracket and knowing logically that it's totally unpredictable?
I stopped looking at it.
Man, why did I screw up? I should have known that Houston was going to be Tennessee. I look back.
I haven't looked at my bracket in like a week and a half.
Yeah,
I felt stupid about the St. John's thing. So I was like,
St. John's was your mistake?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I had them going to the Final Four. So yeah, that was a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, Patino's amazing, but I probably should have known it was maybe just a little too much hype.
Turns out Gonzaga, Alabama, and Auburn were also my mistakes. Thanks a lot.
I thought I was going to really finish high this year. Because I was going to the Elite Eight with seven alive, and I thought that Tennessee was going to advance. I thought they were the team, but didn't happen.
Perloff, if you came in 25th, I mean, you're no Andrew Kaplan, but
two
none
mistakes.
Of us are.
Two mistakes. I lost to Gelb.
Gelb did.
No,
Gelb
I mean, listen,
23rd.
I was, you know who influenced me a lot? John Fanta.
Yeah.
He had Florida winning at all, and he kind of, I listened to a lot of him, and he made some good cases. I got to be honest, like, Florida was hot at the end of the last year, but how did you know that was going to, at the end of the regular season, it was kind of hard to figure them out.
And to some of our loyal listeners like Kristen, Pine Needle, your wife Sarah came in 76th. Not bad. There we go.
Good job for the 716. Good job, Kristen.
I'm glad everyone had fun doing this, and we'll do it again next year. It'll be a dynamite. Speaking of Maggie and Perloff official business, we also have some movie sequels to update you on. All right, Pro, well, they're cutting down the nets on the movie sequel bracket as well. We've got final results for you in our quest to find the greatest movie sequel of all time. So just to recap, who made it to the championship game? Heavy hitters, Blue Bloods. First up, it was The Godfather 2.
There's a plane waiting for us to take us to Miami in an hour. They'll make a big thing about it. I know it was you, Fredo. You broke my heart. You broke my heart.
Guess what happened to Fredo?
Nothing good.
I guess Fredo's no longer with us.
Spoiler alert.
It's amazing, though, with the music in the background. They're trying to leave Havana as the Castro's taking over. What a great movie. So that was one side of the championship game in the movie sequel bracket. The other belonged to Star Wars Empire Strikes Back.
You have learned much, young one.
You'll find I'm full of surprises.
Your destiny lies with me, Skywalker. Obi-Wan knew this to be true.
No.
All right, Godfather Part 2 against Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. And the winner is The Empire Strikes Back, 54% to 46%. Star Wars is the greatest movie sequel of all time.
Never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No. I am your father. Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
No!
That's awesome.
Amazing. I mean, still one of the great plot twists in movie history.
Yeah, definitely.
So Star Wars Empire Strikes Back is your champion in the Maggie and Perloff movie sequel bracket. And while I love Godfather more because I'm not a Star Wars person, it is a very worthy champ.
One of the highest, adjusted for inflation, I just looked at it. It's one of the highest grossing movies of all time. Star Wars being number two all time behind Gone with the Wind. And this is top 10. It was a phenomenon. It was huge. You know who we got to get on the horn? Who's the world's biggest Star Wars fan?
Who?
Jackson Dart is the ultimate. I saw a feature on him. It's the defining characteristic of the Ole Miss quarterback. And apparently, it's all he's talking about on the draft circuit is how much he loves. Remember he dressed up as Anakin Skywalker during a game? We had to explain this to you. He had the eye paint on.
I didn't get it.
So there's all these. He is the ultimate Star Wars nerd, which I have no idea what that means for his draft status. But he lives for Star Wars.
Maybe it bodes well for him. I mean, Empire Strikes Back just won our bracket. Maybe he uses this as
a catapult.
You
want a nerd at quarterback on your team? Don't you need a tough guy?
Well, I don't want a party animal, so I'll take nerd over party animal. Someone who sits around watching Empire Strikes Back, I can get behind that.
I don't know. I'm not sure. I think we're in uncharted territory to have a Star Wars nerd in the first round, possibly. We'll see.
Congratulations, Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, and narrowly edges out The Godfather 2 as the greatest movie sequel of all time. Did you have a problem with that? 888-710-4ISN. Coming up next, award-winning broadcaster Holly Rowe is going to join us. Speaking of Jackson Dart, not just covering college hoops, but Holly saw all these quarterbacks as she is covering college football for ESPN.
Can we just agree, Dark Knight was the Duke of this tournament, went out on the Final Four, had all the talent in the world, had Cooper Flagg, and went out. I just want to say that.
Listen, if the slipper fits. 888-710-4ISN. Don't move.
No!
Welcome back to the Maggie and Perloff Show. Once again, the movie sequel bracket in the books. Nets have been cut down. Your champion to find the greatest movie sequel of all time. It was Star Wars Empire Strikes Back, taking out The Godfather 2. And We are so pleased to turn our attention now to someone who we absolutely love and admire. She's an award-winning broadcaster and journalist. She's joining us on behalf of Allstate's NACDA Good Works team. It's Holly Rowe, fresh off of UConn's national championship. Holly, it's Maggie and Perloff. Thank you so much for joining us. We're massive fans. Empire Strikes Back versus Godfather 2. Do you have a thought on which movie sequel was better?
Empire Strikes Back. I'm a Star Wars girl all day, every day.
Okay, love well, you're it. Going with the crowd here. We heard Jackson Dart is also a very big Star Wars person. We'll talk to you about college football in just a moment. But for basketball and for the women's tournament that you just covered, UConn, champions once again, what does it mean that they're back on the top of the mountain, the very, very top of the mountain, yet again?
It's really interesting because in our post-game interview with Gino Auriemma, he was emotional. And he, you know, tears started coming out of his eyes, you know, and I'm standing so close to him and I'm like, oh, wow, he is crying. And he said something really interesting. I don't know that I thought we'd ever get back here. And, you know, you think about this. He is the winningest coach of all time. He just passed Mike Krzyzewski earlier this year. He's won more games than anyone in the history of basketball. And for him to be doubting if he could do it again, I find that fascinating of just how hard it is. And UConn has made it look so easy for so long. Now they have 12. They pass UCLA men as the team with the most in basketball history. So Gino doing it, but I was just struck by how personal and how he questioned it himself. Mm. And I thought it was a really special kind of tender moment of self-doubt and self-fulfillment all in one.
Yeah, Holly, I've always wondered about Gino Auriemma, and we've had this debate many times. Is he arrogant or confident? Because, and I love him because he's a Philly guy, but he comes off as arrogant sometimes to me.
Yeah, it's a facet. He really is one of the more fascinating people I've ever covered in my life. I read his biography, and if anyone hasn't done that, you really should. Gino Auriemma came to this country on a boat when he was 7 years old, immigrating from Italy. He gets to America and he doesn't speak English and his clothes aren't right. And so he really is a very deeply insecure person at heart because he just didn't fit in as a kid. And yet he found something that he's good at. And so he is arrogant, but that arrogance and that brash personality really kind of covers up this kid from, you know, coming off the boat and that feeling of not fitting in. So he is confident. I know he knows he's a great basketball coach. He has something in him that I once asked him, why are you great at your job? And he said, I'm able to see what people need in themselves and how to push those buttons to get them there that even they don't know. And it's just a skill that he learned and he's fantastic at. Is he brash? Maybe, yeah. Does he say stuff that people are like, oh my gosh, yes. But I'll tell you this, he's a truth speaker, much in the same way that sometimes when Don Staley says things, people might be like, oh, that's sour grapes or whatever. Don is amazing. Don has that same Philly brashness, that same Philly confidence. And I really listen when those two speak because I know that something great is coming.
Holly Rowe is joining us. Of course, she's an award-winning broadcaster and journalist covering the biggest sports that we have in this industry. She's also joining us on behalf of Allstate, the NACDA Good Works team, which we'll ask you about in a minute, Holly, because it's athletes and you helping them do good things off the court and off the field. You know, it seems hard to imagine, but it was just a couple months ago where you were really like on the Caitlin Clark beat. You know, you were following her every move. I'm curious if you think year two for her in the WNBA is going to be the same fever pitch that we saw in year one and coming off her college career, or do you think things die down a little bit? What do you think is in store for her in her second season?
Okay, first of all, hello, the best pun ever, fever pitch. Get it? Indiana fever. I love it. What you did there.
You're welcome.
I don't know if you meant to or not, but it was amazing. it's so funny. I did text Caitlin during the March run and say, I just miss watching you play right now. And she's like, I miss playing right now. Mm. So that was one of the most intriguing, fun stories of my entire career because I got to be at every single record she set. You know, so that's a once in a lifetime opportunity for a journalist. And just beyond that, she is so fun to watch play basketball. So I think it's going to be at even more of a fever pitch. And here's why. We've now gone for 6 months without watching Caitlin Clark. Nobody's seen her play basketball in 6 months. And that's just going to make fans, I think, hungrier, more excited to watch her play. And then you add on top of that, the Indiana Fever got a new coach. I did think their previous coach did a nice job, but they brought in Stephanie White, who is just an offensive genius. I think she will elevate them even more. And then they signed some big-time free agents, that so Caitlin will have more help when it comes to being competitive in the WNBA. I look for them to be a really dangerous, you know, they made the playoffs last year. I do think they'll be a playoff team again this year. And, you know, Caitlin finished third in MVP voting last season. I wouldn't be shocked if she isn't in the MVP conversation again this year.
Holly, excellent job in the post game. I noticed one thing that maybe this is my noticing, that Paige Becker seemed a little, not hesitant to come up to the mic, but she seemed like she wanted to celebrate her teammates. I'm just curious, like, what kind of star power does Paige Beckers have? Is she going to want to step into that limelight where Caitlin Clark has been? Does she want to be the face of a team moving forward?
She does want to be the face of a team, but I think what she has learned, because she is under that same microscope. I saw the same kind of, I talked to some kids. We were out in Spokane, and there were some people in the stands who had driven 2,500 miles from Canada to come watch Paige play. Two other little girls that had driven 1,000 miles to come and watch Paige play. So she is starting to get kind of that same scrutiny and that same publicity that Caitlin Clark did, but she wants it to be about her team. And I've actually struggled this season. You know, I want to honor what the athlete wants to give me in the interview. She never wants to talk about herself. And I honor that, and I get it if you want to say one or two questions about, you know, the team. But she scored 40 points in a game in Spokane, and I was trying to get to, like, what helped you do it? What was special? Were you in a flow? Like, give me one detail about yourself. And she just wouldn't. It was only about the team. And so that's why on the podium, you know, you see her saying, you know, like, shouldn't someone else get credit? And so I did. I wasn't supposed to. But at the very end, I brought up Paige, you know, the producers in my ear, like, grab Paige. But then I also brought up Sarah Strong, her teammate, because I knew it would bother Paige if Sarah wasn't getting some attention. She had a monster game. They don't win that championship without Sarah Strong. And so I always want to honor what the athlete wants. These interviews aren't about me. They're about what the athlete wants and what the fans want to hear. I do hope that when I get, you know, we're doing the WNBA draft, and Paige will likely be the number one pick on Monday. And I do hope that she'll allow me to ask her questions about herself on that day.
This is like when the journalists, and we have to get in the lab and try to be like, all right, how are we going to approach this differently? Holly Rowe is one of the absolute best at it. She's an award-winning broadcaster and journalist, and joining us on behalf of Allstate. Again, we'll ask about that in just one moment. We just got a couple more minutes with you. But you are also part of the number one team for college football. Holly, we have the draft coming up soon. Who is the best quarterback that you saw this season?
Wow. That's tough for me, because it's probably not going to be the popular answer. But what I saw from Shador, I would say Shador is probably my number one as far as skill, electricity, improvisation, ability to make things happen. He's a winner. I really like Shador, and I've got to know him pretty well over the last couple of years. He is a lovely guy. He is very kind and always speaks, always says hello. I really like Shador Sanders from a personality standpoint, from a winning standpoint, and from a skill set standpoint. But then my next answer, and everyone's going to be like, what, really? Is Will Howard, the Ohio State quarterback that took that team on this legendary run. He is super accurate. And I think that's the thing that people forget. When you get to the NFL, you have to be the most precise, accurate. That's why Joe Burrow's good. Actually, Joe Burrow is good because he has elite processing speed. I actually spoke to his sports science people when he was at LSU. They've never had anyone test as fast on their speed of processing drills with his eyes and mind making decisions and processing. But accuracy, Baker Mayfield, accuracy. You know, all the guys that succeed that you're like, oh, he's too small or he's too short. Kyler Murray. Accuracy, CJ Stroud. So that's what I look for when I'm talking about a quarterback at the next level, because you can get away with floating one in there as a college player, but not at the NFL.
Holly, you're here with us on behalf of Allstate, the NACDA Good Works team. This seems very in line with your whole brand as well, about highlighting what athletes do off the field and off the court. What has been the best part about this partnership from your standpoint?
Yeah, it's really cool. So NACTA is all of the athletic directors in the country, that association. So I love that they are showcasing what young people are doing in their community. So we get to go through a list of all of these nominees and we pick a Good Works team. And this is the first year ever that they have expanded the Good Works team beyond football. So I think it's really cool. 33 years, Allstate has been recognizing young people doing good work in the community. I can remember back to the days when it was Kirk Cousins on this team. You know, we have had some really high level, famous quarterbacks, players throughout the college football era. And now we have other sports and women, which really matters to me. Paige Beckers is on the team this year. She has done unbelievable work with food scarcity, setting up a food bank in her high school back home in Minnesota. Our captain this spring is a gymnast from Auburn named Sophia Groth, who's working with young women who might get pregnant while they're in college and what their options are. So I'm kind of inspired by these young people. I remember thinking, like, when I was in college, I was good at doing community service. And as we get older, we get busy. And I'm like, man, these young people are teaching me I've got to do more in the community. So I am grateful. Allstate is doing an unbelievable job. NACTA, the Association for Athletic Directors, that they are promoting this. You know, they're young people doing a lot of cool work. And, you know, shout out to Paige. She somehow found time to do it and win a national championship in her spare time.
Is it true that Kirk Cousins did community service and afterwards screamed "you like that" to the room? Is that rumor true?
It's hysterical for us to see him. This is a funny story. So I did his bowl game when he was a senior at Michigan State. He got the living you-know-what beat out of him playing Alabama. It's the worst game I've ever seen a quarterback get beat up. And he was on the field in New Orleans the very next day at the Sugar Bowl being honored for the Allstate team. He could barely walk. He was limping, walking out onto the field. So Kirk Cousins is someone I always think of when I think of this team, because no matter what happens in his life, he finds a way to give back and be good to others. And that, I think that's a really special trait. But seeing the hard version of Kirk Cousins, that's hysterical to me, because he's literally the world's nicest man.
You can go to NACTA, NACDA.com for more information. Holly, again, we're huge fans. Congrats on a great women's tournament and good luck with the WNBA draft. And I know ESPN keeps you incredibly busy, but you are one of the best of the best. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on today.
That's amazing. You like that Thanksgiving turkey?
Yeah, yeah. You like that bowl of soup I just served you?
That would be the an unreal heel turn from Kirk Cousins.
And by the way, a little
trash talking at during charity events.
And I admit, for some reason, I don't remember him getting killed. That explains maybe why he fell in the fourth round.
You like that?
Interesting. I don't know how we got into Kirk Cousins, but that's how these conversations go. A little surprise. Like, she was pretty bullish on Shedeur Sanders and Will Howard there.
We asked them, who are the best people you saw? And she's there with Kirk Herbstreit and Chris Fowler. So she's doing all the A games.
And I love the fact that she said Shedeur is very friendly, says hello all the time. Mm-hmm. See, that seems like what the Shedeur we see on TV.
Yeah, we only had that one blip as far as his personality is concerned. Unless you think he's flashy or whatever. But like, that's, you know, I would say kids today, certain kids today. But the draft stuff, he seemed disinterested in some of the draft interviews. Remember at the combine? That's kind of the only, that's the only negative personality thing I feel like.
Well, he did call, there's a report, you know, he called out his teammates. He called out the line a couple times.
At the Nebraska game, remember, he was like, Raiola didn't get touched, so that's why he played so well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders argument at a workout once where they're half talking trash and half getting into each other's personalities. He seems like he'd be fun to hang out with to me. I trust Holly.
I think she's a good judge of character. Andrew Bogish, not so much. He's here. I'm just kidding. He's here.
Am I a bad character or a bad judge?
A bad judge. No, okay. No. Great character. A-plus character. What do you got for headlines?
After back-to-back.
But you like us, so. That's true.
But your player comp is Quinn Ewers, for anyone who's not watching.
Right.
Bogish is a slightly older version of Quinn Ewers.
Yeah, less talented, too.
You're like Quinn's older brother.
Like his dad.
You're not that much less talented.
I mean,
Quinn keeps
falling. EJ wasn't.
No. Look at the picture. Quinn looks exactly like him.
Great-grandfather, perhaps.
Oh, jeez.
Shouldn't you be in preschool? Is it nap time for you yet?
Yes, actually. So let's get this going so I can take a nap.
After back-to-back 30-point games.
Walter... Clock doesn't move faster during Bogus's updates.
Well, Walter Clayton Jr. didn't score in the first half last night in San Antonio. His Gators were down 3 to Houston at that point, then 42-30 early second half, but then Clayton right in the middle of a big Florida rally.
Florida now down 3 with the basketball. trying to draw even. Clayton dribbling on the logo. A little shot fake, drives left side of the lane, all the way to the rim. Count the bucket and the foul. Walter Clayton Jr., his first field goal comes on a rack attack.
Kevin Kugler on the Westwood One NCAA Radio Network. Clayton finished with 11 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, plus the closeout that led to Emmanuel Sharp's game-deciding turnover. Fellow guard Elijah Martin had his struggles last night as well, but also came through late for Todd Golden.
They did what they always do. You know, they stepped up. Elijah hit those big free throws. I thought he guarded really well all night. I thought Walter's defense in the second half was great. And, you know, they just found a way to win the ballgame.
Martin's free throws gave Florida the lead for good. They won 65-63 for the third national title in program history. This is the first time this season Houston lost when allowing 65 points or less. They were 30-0. So while the Gators parted in the Riverwalk, the Cougars were left in tears. This is Jaywan Roberts on head coach Kelvin Sampson.
I wanted it so bad for him. So bad. And it hurts because I can't do it next year. I can't put myself in position to do it next year. This will be my last time wearing my jersey, and I feel terrible.
Houston is now 0-3 in the men's title game, 0-7 in the Final Four altogether. On the women's side, former Notre Dame guard Olivia Miles, who could have been the second pick in next week's WNBA draft but decided to stay in school, is reportedly transferring to TCU. In the NBA, the Kings got 43 points from Zach LaVine, 37 from DeMar DeRozan for a 127-117 win in Detroit. Sacramento's won 3 straight, now has a full game lead on the Mavs for 9th in the West. And the Heat down the Sixers, 117-105, extending this Philly losing streak to 12. The Giants' 7-game win streak ended with a 2-0 home loss to the Reds. The Cubs blanked the Rangers 7-0, and the Blue Jays 6-2 winners at Fenway, Texas, and Boston had won 5 in a row. You think those giggling Knicks fans will be giggling again tomorrow when the Celtics beat the Knicks again tonight?
Fully healthy Knicks team. This is the time.
Is that the problem against the Celtics and the Cavs and the Thunder?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, darn tootin'.
We'll be playing in the next few weeks. Your teams will be looking at ping pong balls. Really can't say anything
It's
right
really
now.
What's going to kill them is if somehow the 76ers do get Cooper Flagg, then it's going to be a pall on the entire show. But can
Ben Simmons worked out for them real well.
Yeah, and Markelle Fultz.
Yeah.
One thing, did you guys notice that because of the way this game went last night, and it was really like an offensive slog, the final score, 65-63, there just weren't a lot of offensive highlights. So in one shining moment, which obviously like the
shining moment.
Thank you, Luther Vandross. Yeah. Well, let's
or
leave
not.
The singing to him.
Yeah.
May he rest in peace.
More like Luther Van Doff.
Fast.
Yeah. Guys, back to me.
Yeah, please.
So did you notice because the championship game didn't actually give us a ton of highlights, they showed the Elijah Martin dunk from the Final Four, from the semifinal, like in 4 different angles, one highlight from the championship game, and then it was like they closed it out.
Was it at least a Florida highlight? Because there was one sick dunk by that.
It was
Houston
a Walter guy. Clayton Jr., I think his only 3.
Oh, his right? 3? One?
Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, that's also, isn't that an editing situation? You only get a couple in from that night.
No, I know, but usually it's more than just one.
Yeah, I mean, I feel that pain this morning. Other than the last play, there's nothing else to play, highlight-wise.
Also, I love Kevin Kugler. You know that I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Guest on the show many times. Is Ian Eagle trademark Rack Attack?
Trademarked it. Wow.
Well, I don't know if he's actually, but is that his thing?
Caught a body.
That was great. Last
I don't know.
Night.
I would appreciate if Manny wasn't laughing in my ear when Rack Attack was said. Would you grow up, dude?
Well, so we already talked about Hooters for 15 minutes. We can't do another Rack Attack.
Kind of,
we
could.
Different type of Rack Attack.
That's kind of why I wondered maybe it was already trademarked, not by Iron Eagle. But
by Larry
Are we
Flint?
Getting back to the Magic City Wings?
Maybe somebody wants to put a rename the Miami Heat arena again.
Rack Attack Tuesday, is that Magic?
It would be funny if Magic City called like ribs or something the Rack Attack. We're just giving them good ideas now.
I mean, if your menu is not all like breast related titles, and you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, that would be Manny's master's menu. Chicken breasts.
Or the rack
of ribs.
Right.
Pork butt.
You guys are painting me out to be you guys are painting me out to be such a bad guy, but that's not a bad idea. Chicken breasts?
The pork butt is and I'm surprised that's not some girl's nickname. I'm
Probably
sorry, woman.
Is.
That's not some woman's nickname at Magic City.
Probably is.
Oh, you mean Sophia? Oh, pork butt?
pork butt.
Like set in, you know, out of love.
Yeah, she serves food.
She doesn't dance, pork butt. Set out of love?
Listen.
How do you say that out of love?
That's a great question. I think now you have to, you know, you got to have a certain type of body type.
We don't discriminate.
No.
Not at the place I'm
going to
open.
Only them against you.
I don't know. I thought that Ian Eagle had rack attack, but maybe I'm wrong about that. Like how, you know, Breen has bang.
Yeah, yeah.
Which also could
again,
be on the menu.
You're not helping us here, Meg.
Bang, bang, shrimp.
Bang! Bang!
All right. And that thus concludes the Children's Hour.
There's one more segment of Children's Hour, Maggie.
And then 3 days.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
True North stores have Primo Eats and Pepsi brand products that are heavy on taste and light on your wallet. Right now, buy any Primo sandwich and add a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Handmade every day, Primo uses quality meats and cheeses. Complete the meal with a Pepsi. Grab any Primo sandwich and pair it with a 20-ounce Pepsi brand beverage for just $1. Get more with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your app store. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Alo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Actually, I have something here in the rundown that Perloff said, remind me to yes. tell you a story.
Yes, I just, and it's, it involves the same topic.
Yes.
The rack attack?
Rack attack!
Sort of.
All right, well, you got our attention. 888-710-4ISN-MFP.
Okay, I can top that one shining moment. Welcome back, Maggie and Perloff Show. I promised a story that I had to have in front of Maggie.
Yeah, Florida won the national title, by the way. Back to you.
One shining moment. There is a tortoise in the Philadelphia Zoo named Abruzzo.
Hermes. Oh.
I have a hurt. He just became a father for the first time.
Wow, congrats.
He's 100 years old.
<It's> so like Robert De Niro.
Yeah. Took him so long.
The mom is also 100 years old.
Whoa, that's biblical.
So Manny, I'm just saying you have a chance, but this guy finally got lucky. This guy.
At some point to procreate at any time.
This guy finally got lucky
at
100.
Who wants to procreate?
I think this honestly might have been the oldest living virgin.
Steve Carell's there and to pass a torch.
Like, this honestly, CNN had this like number one story: stock market issues. Number two, tortoise gets lucky at 100. So anyway, that's all.
Is there tortoise Viagra? Like what had to go into the making of this? No, but
we might need some conversion here. I think those things live to be hundreds of years old.
Yeah,
so that might only be a middle-aged turtle.
Oh, might or be teenager. An
older, yeah.
What are those older fathers at the playground? It just sounds like a little bit old, like me. Kind of, but
he might be 35 in human years. We don't know.
Yeah. No, I don't think they don't live that long.
But there's
200, 150?
There are turtles in that Philadelphia Zoo that are well over 100 years old.
Wow.
Also, how do you know it's the first time?
I you know what? I'm just going to tell you. The first time I learned about the birds and the bees were
she was like, could have been better.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. First time I ever learned about the birds and the bees was two tortoises at the Philadelphia Zoo when I was 5 years old. Whoa. Not joking. That's a real true story.
Even at five, you had any clue what they were
I don't know.
To?
Whatever. I don't remember what age I was.
5 years old is wild.
Why is that turtle laying on that other turtle?
Exactly. That was the form of question.
What's a rack attack, mommy?
And why can I order it here at Magic City's lunch menu?
Yeah. Why is that announcer guy saying bang?
You know, I'm really glad to say I don't think I've ever seen two animals getting it on at the zoo. That is something I don't want to witness.
Oh, God.
Yeah, no thanks. God, I don't want to explain that. Nope. I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to witness that.
Nope.
I'd keep walking.
How about some feces? You seen some feces getting...
thrown? Like monkeys and stuff?
Well, not thrown, but ejected.
Oh.
This is your...
This
is your follow-up?
Maybe.
That's what I've seen at the zoo.
Yeah, sure.
Maybe. You definitely have. You can't have... If you've been to a zoo once, you've seen it.
Like probably.
Yeah.
You ever feed a giraffe?
I have.
That's tough.
I've had
one.
That's awesome.
I did it.
Purple tongues.
Oh, yeah.
Lee Steinberg's Tampa Bay Zoo party.
Yeah, sure.
The famous sports agent?
Yes. He had his party at the zoo, and we all got to feed giraffes. It was amazing.
Was this before he got sober?
No, I don't think so. No.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, I think he was sober. No, I think it was... What
did he
was
end up like in the gorilla ring?
Tampa Bay, 2009?
Wow.
Yeah.
Quickly, JT's in Atlanta. JT... You want to weigh in on the movie sequel bracket, the finale. Congrats, Empire Strikes Back takes out Godfather 2. What do you got?
Definitely. And I also want to say, it's probably not that turtle's first time, because I've had a similar instance. Last time I took my kids to the zoo, turtles were getting it on, and there was a lot of questions asked. And it was like, if this is a thing with turtles, I can't imagine in 100 years that's the first time.
Yeah, it seems like they're, you know, more than once every century.
Yeah.
Right. You brought up the plot twist of all time. And I don't know if any of you guys are into White Lotus.
No. JT has to go on hold. I'm sorry. I haven't seen the finale yet. Bogish has. He knows all this, how everything ends, and I haven't seen it yet. JT, we love you, but we had to cut you off. Empire Strikes Back. Greatest plot twist in the history of cinema?
Sixth Sense was a pretty big one.
Yeah.
Those are both good.
G-Baby getting shot hurt me.
What?
That was a plot twist. Didn't expect that.
Oh,
is that a
boy.
Straight to DVD?
You guys aren't familiar with the work of Keanu Reeves?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, EJ Stewart, Manny Rodriguez. Thank you to Andrew Bogish. Andrew Kaplan won our Pearl Jam. Congrats, dude.